Welcome back to House of Bravo, where we break down Bravo shows and personalities from a cosmic perspective. I'm Emma, an astrocartographer and human design reader. Each week, we'll uncover the underlying energies shaping the drama both on screen and off, from current astro weather and events to deep dives into Bravo Liberty's energetics. This is your one-stop shop podcast to get your Bravo fix while learning to decode the language of the stars.
Hi, friends. Happy Mercury officially being retrograde. We are out of the shadow period, and as of Monday, April 1st, we entered the actual period of Mercury stationing retrograde, where it will remain until the 25th of April, where it then stations direct. This is not an actual thing taking place in the sky. I mean, it is and it isn't. Mercury is not actually moving in a backwards motion. It just appears to be from our place on Earth. As we now know, the Earth is not the center of our universe. The sun is. And speaking of the sun, we have an epic solar eclipse happening on Monday, March 8th. Why is this going to be epic? First of all eclipses are epic in their own way. Eclipses are a way of moving us towards our destiny, part of our karmic path, tied to our destiny. Why? Because the nodes, the moon's nodes are involved. The north node, the south node, always in opposition to each other, are passing the point of the ecliptic, where we then have this phenomena where we see either on these two points of the path of ecliptic, oh my God, guys, bear with me, please. Either the moon is going to be directly blocking the sun from where we are on Earth, or the Earth is in between the sun and the moon. And for those lucky people who just happen to be within the path of totality, you'll actually get to witness the sky going completely dark and seeing the alignment, which is really fucking cool. I'll be traveling to, my uncle lives in northern Vermont, and so hopefully we'll just be able to see it from his backyard, because I know the roads everywhere, it's just going to be so crazy out. But we're hoping for clear skies so that we actually catch this. I saw something really cool, because like we know we're not supposed to look directly at the sun. And of course, there are eclipse glasses, but if you have a disco ball, it reflects what's going on with the eclipse in a really cool way. I do not have a disco ball, but I don't know, maybe I'll buy one. It just seems like it would be a very cool thing to watch being reflected, all the little crescents as the eclipse is taking place. I digress. This eclipse is not only the sun meeting the nodes and the moon meeting the nodes, but we also have some other players in the mix as well. So the sun, which will be conjunct the north node currently in Aries, is also going to be conjunct Chiron, the wounded healer. And this is further special and unique because eclipses don't always happen during Mercury retrograde. With all of these things taking place in the sign of Aries, it's really giving us as individuals, but also as collective, a chance to heal ourselves on the individual level, on a collective level. What is it that we need to heal ourselves? And one of the most common questions I get asked is, how do I know if this affects me, how it affects me? Yes, in reference to the eclipses, but really any transit that's taking place that's talked about on, you know, social media, and people become, a lot of astrologers are very dogmatic about the way that they view astrology. This is going to be cataclysmic. This is going to be epic, all these things. And it's really, yeah, part of it's clickbait. Part of it's also just like astrologers have been speaking about astrology that way for millennia. I just don't happen to be one of those astrologers. Chalk it up to my Aquarius moon, my Sagittarius rising, my Gemini millions of placements. I just don't see the world in such a black and white, good and bad way. I know that there's so many more colors involved, so many more scales of gray. So, how do you know how this affects you? The first thing you're going to want to do is, well, pull up your natal chart, of course. And you're going to want to also know what degree and sign whatever transit you're curious about is happening in. So this upcoming eclipse is taking place at 19 degrees and 24 seconds, I think 24, but 19 degrees is really what you're aiming for, Aries. And since it's an eclipse and there's always the north and south nodes at play, it's also going to be taking place at 19 degrees Libra. If you want to pull up your chart and go ahead and identify where does 19 degrees Libra and Aries fall. For this, you are going to need to know your exact time of birth because that dictates your ascendant, which kicks off your first house. And everything else kind of falls into place around that. So if you want to know how you're going to be affected by something, you need to know your exact time of birth for a more accurate depiction. Otherwise, you'll be able to see, okay, maybe these are kind of the themes at play, but I don't know what area of life they will play out in for me as an individual. Each house of a natal chart represents something different, a different area of life. And I'm going to be greatly oversimplifying this because houses represent so much more than what I'm going to touch on. But just generally, the first house is about self, identity, appearance. The second house is about values, personal finances. The third house, communication, short distance travel. The fourth house, family, ancestry, home, your roots. The fifth house is about creativity, fun. The sixth house, day-to-day routines and habits, also health. The seventh house, one-on-one relationships, whether that's romantic or otherwise. The eighth house is about mergers with others, about shared finances. The ninth house, higher learning, foreign travel. The 10th house represents career, public perception of us. 11th house, our groups, our networks, also hopes and dreams. But again, like I'm very much oversimplifying all of these houses. And the 12th house is kind of our subconscious, that which is hidden from us, whether it be enemies, whether it be institutionalizing, whether it be like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Since you've got your chart pulled up and you know that you're looking for 19 degrees Aries and Libra, where is this eclipse going to be taking place for you? Is it going to be hitting your first and seventh house, your second and eighth, your third and ninth, your fourth and tenth, your fifth and 11th, or your sixth and 12th? So that's kind of what you're going to, that's the first thing that you want to look at. Then for this particular instance, since we know this is going to be conjunct Chiron, it's going to involve healing, it's going to be taking into account the fact that Mercury is retrograde while this is happening, think about how healing and growth come into play in those areas of your life that this is going to be hitting. For example, the last time a solar eclipse took place during Mercury retrograde was August 2017. It was on the Leo Aquarius nodal axis. And that for me was really the beginning of my journey, quitting my corporate job to do something else. I didn't know what, but I just knew something. And for me, that was hitting my second and my eighth houses. I was breaking away from a consistent paycheck to focus on my values, on what I wanted my life, my finances to ultimately look like. If we're looking at my chart from a whole sign perspective, because I do for transits like to look at both Placidus, which I use
for natal chart readings, but also I like to look at whole sign for transits because I think it just gives like a broader picture. So by whole sign, it was hitting my third and ninth house. And I really was, it pushed me on a path of learning how to better communicate. I did a lot of, I took a lot of courses. I got certified as a coach, which is all about communication, your listening skills, helping others to communicate with themselves. So all these themes were going to come into play. Did I know that at the time? No, absolutely not. It's not something I saw in the moment, but looking back, it's so clear to me. And on a personal level, this is why I prefer to use astrology as a way to understand the past, more so than using it to try to predict my future or anyone else's, especially during an eclipse time when the universe is taking the wheel and bringing us closer to our destiny, whatever that ends up meaning for us. Like, we don't know what's in store during eclipses. But to get back to you looking at your chart, it doesn't stop at just the houses and the signs that this is taking into consideration and the planets that are transiting that are also aspected. But you want to take it a step further and look at what planets of yours will be aspected by this eclipse. So, for example, if you have any cardinal placements, it doesn't have to be your sun, it doesn't have to be your moon, it could be your Jupiter, it could be your Mars. Cardinal placements are Aries, Cancer, Libra, Capricorn. This eclipse will be making a hard aspect to any of your cardinal placements around that 19 degrees. It's either going to be a conjunction, an opposition, or a square. So what planets are involved in that aspect? What sign are those planets in? What house are those planets in? All of these things are going to color how whatever event you're looking into is going to affect you on a personal level. And it doesn't have to just be cardinal placements. I just gave that example. Let's say this is taking place in Aries, the North Node's in Aries. If you have any planets at 19 degrees fire sign, it's going to be trining the North Node. If you have anything at 19 degrees in an air sign, because the South Node's in Libra, the South Node will be trining those placements in those air signs. There are other aspects that things can be making, but I'm just kind of giving you a high level of how to look at how an astrological event affects you and how you can start to unravel these stories on your own. The last thing to remember is that nothing is in a vacuum. Time is constantly moving, lives are evolving. An astrological movement, or what's going on in the cosmos, is really just a time-telling tool. So this will be a continuation of a story that started last year when the nodes first moved into these signs and will continue into 2025. We're only at the halfway point of whatever this Aries Libra eclipse story is going to mean for us. We're only halfway through this movie, so to speak. So if you're thinking everyone's so dramatic about eclipses, but nothing happened, it can be a slow build. It could also hit you like a Mack truck. That's kind of just like a quick and dirty, how do I know how something's affecting me? Or what area of life? Or where should I be looking? Like, these are the things you want to be looking for. I hope this helps. Of course, you can reach out to me if you have any questions. All right, we're talking about the eclipse. We're talking about epic things. Eclipses are pretty epic. And something else that is epic is Beyoncé. She's not Bravo related, but we did do a bonus episode on her. And I just feel like every time Beyoncé does anything, the whole world takes note. Plus, I can't get a lot of these songs out of my head. On first listen, I didn't love the album. I still don't love the album, but then again, I have alternating appetite. I'm very rarely going to love a whole album. I take bits and pieces that I like, and that's exactly what happened here.
However, let's just like get into Beyonce real quick. We don't know what time Beyonce was born. We do know that she's a Virgo sun, she's a Scorpio moon. And if you listen to the Beyonce bonus episode, you would have heard the debate about whether she's a Libra or a Scorpio rising. I tend to lean towards Scorpio rising. Cowboy Carter was released on the 29th of March. I ran the chart for the album. It's an Aries sun. It shares a Scorpio moon with her, and it's a Sagittarius rising. Although, you know, like where is an album born? I ran the chart for Los Angeles because I just feel like she lives there most of the time. But yeah, I wasn't really sure where to put the location. Anyway, that doesn't really matter. You can really see the sun, moon, and rising if like Sagittarius rising is in fact what we're going to be going with coming through in the album. With that Sag rising, she's hitting so many genres. She even has all these interludes throughout the album talking about what is a genre? How can you really classify a piece of music? And the whole album is seemingly in response to her song Daddy Lessons not being recognized as a country song, also for being booed for performing with the Dixie Chicks. It's the most Scorpio thing I've ever heard. Holding on to that, stewing over how to respond to it in a way that will hit them where it hurts while also making her tons of money. Going back to that Sagittarius rising, she's also doing something so new and different here. I mean, talk about like Aries as well. Aries doing something new, different, the start of the zodiac, that baby just like doing, not knowing what's going on, but doing whatever it feels like is best for it. This is what I really love most about Beyonce at this point in her career is she knows she's the shit. She knows people worship the ground she walks on, basically. She's like already had all the fucking projections and stories and everything that could kind of get her down has already happened. And at this point, she kind of uses that to her advantage. She does what she wants to do. She isn't worried about the repercussions. Another thing about the album's chart that I thought was very fitting was the sun, the North Node, Chiron, which as we just discussed are all in Aries right now, are in the album's fourth house. This album is healing family trauma, wounds. Talk about generational healing. I feel like this album has a lot of that for Beyonce. We've heard the stories about her name being spelled incorrectly with an I because how could her family have a French name? Or listen, I'm not the Beyonce expert. I'm just going off I see on the internet. She's been told she isn't country. She's literally from fucking Houston, Texas. You can't get more country. There's probably so many other things that are being healed. Again, I am not a Beyonce expert. I am just a fan. If we look at her chart, her natal North Node is trining the current North Node in Aries by sign, not by degree. The Sun, Chiron, and North Node in Aries that are transiting right now are opposing her natal Libra stellium. She's got a ton of Libra placements, Pluto, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury. She is using her art, this beauty, this creation to, again, help heal these generational wounds, these wounds that she has. It's also like this album in so many ways is showing us that she's maybe not moved on from what happened and the lemonade situation with Jay-Z and the other woman. She hasn't moved on, but she's moved on at the same time. Like she hasn't forgotten, but she's moving forward. She's done the work. She's moving forward. Look at the song Jolene. So incredible. She's decided to put that behind her and keep her family unit tight and move forward. Also very Libran, right? Like weighing the options and deciding where the balance lies for her. What is justice for her? What is correct for her? And using music and her creativity and her artwork as this healing mechanism
So like while Lemonade was about the anger and the hurt, this album is about growth and healing and pushing through and overcoming obstacles. Her natal Jupiter is being activated by the nodes as well. Her Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury, Venus, Pluto, again, all in Libra. This eclipse is hitting all those placements. Anyway, I feel like it's just so encompassing of Beyoncé, this kind of ultra feminine but strong presence. When she speaks, it's soft, but it's strong. Talking about cardinal energy, because we've now hit on it with the eclipse, we've hit on it with Beyoncé's placements and this album, and it's really the only modality that we have left to talk about, because we have covered fixed signs, we've covered mutable signs and what that energy means. So what are cardinal signs? The cardinal signs are Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. They kick off the seasons. Aries kicks off spring, Cancer kicks off summer, Libra kicks off fall, Capricorn kicks off winter. This is only in the Northern Hemisphere that this applies to. This energy, cardinal energy, is about starting things. They kick off the season. It starts things. We know that fixed energy is what kind of carries us through. It's stubborn. It's steadfast. Mutable energy is where we can shift and morph and change. It brings us from one season into the next. But cardinal energy, it kicks off a season. It's about initiating things. It brings newness forth. These signs that are cardinal signs are active, they're self-motivated, they're ambitious, they shake things up and make things happen. And while they're great at starting things, and they put a lot of energy into what they do, they aren't necessarily great at finishing what they have started. And I see this in a lot of ways similar to the energy type in human design manifestors. Manifestors are powerful. They create energy where it didn't exist before. They're highly motivated and driven individuals, but they hit a point of either burning out or they lose interest in what they are doing. And cardinal energy is very similar. When we kind of break these down and we take them one by one, Aries is the fire cardinal sign. It's about self-expression, personal experience. It's quick to act, quick to recover. This very just like, again, pulling from human design, a very third line energy, trial and error, really resilient. Capricorn is the earth cardinal sign. It initiates with an end result in mind. It's motivated by improving. It's motivated by reputation. And because it's an earth sign, it's maybe more steadfast and more like it's in it for the long run, more so than the other cardinal signs are. Libra is the air cardinal sign. Libra is about exploring and pursuing relationships and social experiences. And then Cancer, the water cardinal sign, is about exploring new emotional states and using this information to create. Cancers have a wide emotional spectrum. They feel the high highs, they feel the low lows because they're ruled by the moon. So while it's always new and initiating, it's also kind of consistently in flux because it's ruled by the moon. So as the moon is constantly moving through the zodiac in its 28-day cycle, the Cancer placements, it's not just about your sun sign, are feeling through things from a new perspective as the moon is traveling and giving it more kind of emotional information to initiate on, to act upon. I feel like that's enough lecturing on astrological concepts for today. So let's get into the episodes of the week. It is the beginning of the end of this season of Potomac. All the women looked incredible. Like Karen, wow, that look is a good look for Karen. That hair, I don't even know that I noticed a facelift, but she just looks, yeah, refreshed. I guess that's really what you want from plastic surgery at that age, is not to look different, but to look renewed. I'm so glad that Andy said the season was frustrating as a viewer to watch, because I've felt that actually the past few seasons. I think at least two, maybe even three seasons, I have not been enjoying Potomac. This reunion, I think, was an opportunity for them to show that they can play nice, move forward. And it's only part one, but clearly they weren't able to reach that place. And now, because of that, we see the cast is being shaken up. But honestly, I didn't even take any notes during this episode. I feel like it all just feels like old news. It all feels like old news. And I don't know if I said this last week. I think I might have, because I saw the preview for this and it came to mind then, and it came back to mind again this week. But Gordon just seems like such a gentleman. I'm sure he's not. I'm sure there are sides of him we're not seeing, and he's able to play it nice in front of the cameras. But the way Gordon said hi to Ink in Mia's dressing room, he just seems like a good, classy dude. And what a difficult situation to be in. I just feel like he's handling it really well, again, at least from what we've been seeing on camera. I was trying to track down his birth information. I did find an article on Bravo.com, which makes it seem like he was born September 17th of 1952. So if that's the case, he's got a Virgo sun. His moon's either in Leo or in Virgo. But more importantly, when I look at him and Mia together, some things that stick out to me: his Jupiter in Taurus, Taurus, the finer things in life, finances, comfort, stability. His Jupiter in Taurus is conjunct her North Node in Taurus, and it's opposing her Saturn. So this could be him. First of all, I feel like he, you know, when like the nodes in Sinistry, when the nodes come into play, there could be past life history together. And I could totally see Gordon having been like a father figure or an uncle figure to her in a past life, to where like she feels safe with him, she feels secure with him, but it isn't necessarily like a sexual chemistry that they have with each other. I mean, we've heard her being called a gold digger. It's kind of another way of looking at it, especially in Taurus. He's providing that financial stability for her, helping her on her karmic path move towards that for herself. Mia's Jupiter, speaking of Jupiters, Mia's Jupiter is trining Gordon's Jupiter. They both, hers is in Capricorn, so they both have Earth Jupiters. They both kind of need a stability of sorts, especially like tied to finances. Earth signs are so much about money and stability, groundedness. Her Jupiter in Capricorn is on his Chiron. So her growing into that boss role is something that kind of triggers him. And we saw in seasons past, I don't know if it was two seasons ago, last season, where she was kind of taking over the chiropractic practice and he was becoming this stay-at-home dad. It didn't necessarily seem like a role he wanted to be put into, but that could also have to do with all the stuff happening financially behind the scenes with his family that we still, I mean, I'm still not really clear of what was going on there. Gordon has a Libra stellium. He's got his Saturn, Venus, and Neptune in Libra. That could have something to do with how well he's handling this Ink situation. Like his way of being a person of authority with that Saturn there, his values with that Venus there, it's like he really is trying to find harmony and he wants what's best for Mia. I do believe at the end of the day, even if it isn't with him in it. I mean, he even said, when I turn 70, you can have affairs with other people. Just don't be blatant about it and don't bring the children into it, which, I mean, she didn't listen to either of those stipulations, but she did follow what he allowed of her. But yeah, with like Mars and Sagittarius, those Libra placements, that Jupiter in Taurus, I just feel like his North Node's in Aquarius. I feel like he's a very pragmatic person at the end of the day. And he understands that like things don't need to look a certain way. You can do things a little differently and still be happy with the end result. Now, Mia wasn't happy with those results. She's clearly moved on. So we are going to move on as well. Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. I'm enjoying the season so far. I mean, we're only on what, episode 2? So there's not a lot to go by. I do think that they came in with so much baggage, kind of, based off of whatever has happened either last year, but seemingly more since last year. You know, it's clear that, as I mentioned last week, like Alex, there seems to be some animosity with the cast towards Alex. There's definitely still a rift between Jasmine and the other women. I feel like there's more things that I can't think of off the top of my head. But yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of baggage that's been brought in and people are already, I don't know. It's like on Summer House Hamptons. Like we've had so many seasons of them going through similar things that these people are going through. And I just feel like they don't come back with these chips on their shoulder in the Hamptons. Maybe it's because the setup's different where you're coming every week. You're not just stuck in the house with the same people for 2 weeks. I don't know. Maybe it's just the different personalities. I'm not sure. I also don't really know the drama other than what is showing on the screen because I don't really follow. Well, you guys know me. I don't really follow what's going on behind the scenes unless it's brought to my attention. Getting into the episode, though, Shanice gets called out as the worst dressed and immediately makes it about finances, which I totally get. She's feeling sensitive about her financial situation, having just been laid off. But the quickness of which she snaps back into party mode is making me lean towards a Gemini moon versus Cancer moon, which is the other option. I feel like if she had a Cancer moon, she would more likely to be caught up in her feels about this. Although, of course, it depends on her whole chart. I did pull a chart for her. I'm not sure if it's accurate. I was doing some internet stalking. And, well, what I came up with is I have her as Shanice, not confirmed, in my phone. All right, so Aries Sun, either Gemini or Cancer Moon. We obviously don't know her rising sign. What I can suss out, it's making me lean heavy, like even heavier towards the Gemini Moon. If what I've found for her birth information is correct, she has Mercury and Mars in Pisces. These placements can put you deep into your feelings. All the water signs are very tied to emotional states, and Pisces and Cancer in particular. No, all of them, they go deep with their feelings. I mean, Scorpio too. Scorpio and Pisces actually are kind of like real deep with the Pisces symbolism. It's two fish. One is swimming up towards the surface and the other is always going deep down into the depths. So the quickness with which Shanice snaps back again is leaning me towards that mutable Gemini moon. Here for a good time, fun, flirty, fuck the feelings. Let me just take advantage of this situation I'm in right now. Speaking of Gemini, we have Nick being accused of being overly flirty. Someone with a Gemini moon, Gemini rising, he can't help it, guys. Especially the Gemini rising, you're going to come off as overly friendly, whether that's your intention or not, and it's often equated to flirting. From what I saw, him posing with the girls for a picture, him putting his hand on someone's shoulder, that doesn't seem handsy to me when it's a friend of yours. On the other hand, Summer and Jordan both say that they feel he gets handsy with them. So, you know, maybe like while they were taking the photo, it's where his hands were placed around their waist, or, you know, like these kind of more subtle things that I'm not able to see, but they're feeling in the moment. Unfortunately, and I like really went hard trying to find this information, I can't find Summer's birth info. It's clear something's going on with her. Like, I think anyone can see something is going on with her while this is filming is happening. And all that I know, thanks to Star's ex, Alyssa, is she's got a Leo sun. We know last summer, 2023, Venus was retrograde most of the summer. It was hitting her sun, definitely. And it could potentially have been hitting other placements, depending on when she was born. She could possibly have Mercury, Venus, Mars over in Leo as well. And honestly, like, I wish they showed the dates here, because they do on Summer House Hamptons. Like, what do I care if it's day 3 out of 15? I want to know the actual date. I want to know the time. I want receipts, proof, timeline, screenshots. You know the drill, Bravo. Give it to me. Thankfully, over in the Hamptons, though, I do get dates and times. Absolutely wonderful. This episode of Summer House Hamptons, we have Kyle. All I could say is like, oh man, shake my head. Kyle, no. I cannot imagine being married to someone like this. Kyle's not a bad guy at all, but I totally feel for Amanda. Like, that must be mortifying for him to say things like this, calling out the new guy in front of Craig, saying what he said to Lindsay. Like, what the hell was he thinking? Kyle's sun and Mercury are in Leo. So he was definitely getting hit by Venus retrograde in Leo last year. And his moon is in Aquarius. So the retrograde Venus was opposing his analytical, emotional world. Kyle was at the time, because thank you for showing us the exact date. This was July 21st, I think it was. Kyle was also experiencing his Mercury return. And Mercury, that transiting Mercury, was also conjunct his sun as well. The night that this all took place, Venus was at 28 degrees Leo. It was hitting all his Leo placements. So again, I mean, by all, I mean that sun, that Mercury, it was opposing his moon by sign. Because I don't know Kyle's exact time. I do feel that on the surface, Kyle is oblivious to the social wrongs that he's making. Number one, he was probably drunk. And we know, like, when you're drunk, you tend to say things that are on your mind. He was literally just spewing whatever. And he does think that he's helping and just being charming. His Saturn's in Libra, after all. He's trying to bring harmony. He's failing miserably. His feelings, his emotions about his own relationship were all wrapped up in all of this. On top of that, he's trying to help his friends get to a better place because he's seeing what happens when you're married and you're not on the same page. But still, Kyle, no. The way he phrased that to Lindsay, oh my God. Such a cringe everything. And I feel like Kyle's really kind of stayed out of the drama and out of the mix for a while, but he's just really putting his foot in his mouth here. I really loved the way that the end of this episode was edited. The shots going back and forth between the women talking about Lindsay's relationship and the lack of sex, the men talking about, you know, Carl and his, like, the relationship from his side. It really reminded me of, well, what came to mind was the movie Kids, but no one here probably knows that obscure reference. So, Grease, it was very like, da na 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 na, you know, like going back and forth between the guys and the girls and getting the different sides of the story, seeing the two different perceptions of what's going on. I love that. Something else that really stuck out to me that I thought was interesting, and I think we're all kind of seeing this, you know, we went into this season thinking Carl had done Lindsay wrong by calling off the wedding in the way which he did. Now, we haven't seen that yet, but now we're watching it and we're thinking, okay, it seems like Carl's trying to cover his ass. Carl's trying to show up on the weekends, acting one way. Who knows what's going on between them during the week? We know Lindsay is intense, extreme, hits below the belt. We know that that's Lindsay. That's always been Lindsay. But Carl is coming out a little too choir boy, altar boy. He's coming off a little too clean, and I just don't trust that in itself. And so when I was watching Buying Beverly Hills, I was thinking, why does it feel like there's a similarity between Carl and Lindsay and Mauricio and Kyle? Because to me, it just seems like the women are getting a bad heat. The men are showing up on camera trying to seem like they're doing everything to make the relationship, and it's the women who are the issue and they're not putting in the effort. I don't know. I just saw, like, I really saw a connection between Mauricio and Carl and how they are handling their respective breakups. I did pull their charts to see if there was, like, a similar signature that this could be coming from. I didn't see anything that was, like, screaming at me. I think they just know how to cover their asses from being people in the spotlight for as long as they both have been. You get media training, you get all this stuff. Plus, at least in Mauricio's case, it's clear from what Kyle has alluded to that he's done her dirty. So the fact that he's trying to play it off like, oh, she's checked out of the relationship. Well, dude, what did you do for her to check out of the relationship? But we don't know yet, or maybe at all. I only made it 2 episodes further in Buying Beverly Hills. Once again, I completely forgot about it and started watching again last night just so that we could have a little chit chat about it today. But I don't know, nothing was like, oh, let me pull their charts. Tell me why, please. These men are having petty fights and I cannot stand it. I watched 2 episodes at 1.5 speed because I just can't bear to sit through it at 1x speed. What I like about this show is the properties. What I don't like about this show is basically everything else. Yeah, these men having these petty fights. I don't understand why I don't enjoy watching men do this, but I love watching women do it. And not only do I love watching women having petty fights, but I love the women for how they show up in these fights. It's not one of those situations where I love to hate them. I love them. I love watching these sides of themselves come through. I do not feel that way about Ben and Zach or whatever their names even are. Oh boy. I do think though, you know, we had I've watched through episode 4 at this point. I think it's interesting that Kyle does keep popping up. I'm surprised that she's allowed, for lack of a better word, to be on this show when she's got a contract with Bravo. I don't know how that works, but I don't remember her being on at all last year. I do still wonder, is Kyle going to come back to Beverly Hills next year? And my gut's telling me no, but my brain is thinking she's not ready to walk away from it. I'm not sure. We'll have to see. But yeah, so like, why is it that I cannot stand these men having these petty fights? Maybe it's because we only see these guys in their work setting and we're not really seeing their life. We're only seeing one piece of the picture. They're not these complicated onions we get to unpeel. What do you do with an onion? You know what I mean? Maybe that's the difference. But yeah, don't love this show. But I will keep watching it and see if something interesting comes up with Mauricio. We've looked at Mauricio's chart here in relation to Kyle, in relation to their marriage, in relation to their impending divorce. And I'll probably do like a deeper dive into Mo's chart maybe next week, or when I have a little more of this season two of Buying Beverly Hills under my belt. For now, I think I'm gonna call this episode. But wait, don't close your podcast player just yet. Go ahead, click subscribe. Please rate, review, please share with a friend. Word of mouth is the best way for podcasts to grow. And if you want to support me, that's really the best way for you to do so. And for more Bravo astrology content, make sure you're following along on Instagram at the Cosmic Clubhouse. Be easy on yourself, be easy on others, and I will see you back here same time, same place next week. Bye.